Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. We have a program announcement. Those of you that follow the Ohio Christian Alliance on our website and our events and activities, our annual Spring Freedom Banquet is coming up on May the 25th at the Akron Fairlawn Hilton. And our speakers this year will be Bill Fetter from the American Minute. Also, we'll have Frank Gaffney from the Center for Security Policy and other special guests. And this year, we're focusing in, of course, the World War II Memorial Prayer Act. That is a project of the Ohio Christian Alliance, legislation that passed in Washington, both the Senate and the House, and was signed by President Obama on June 30th of 2014. And we've been working with members of the U.S. Park Service and Friends of the World War II Memorial for the placement of this presidential prayer, the prayer that FDR prayed with the nation on the morning of the D-Day landings. And so we'll be talking about that at the banquet. There'll be a special presentation. Proceeds from the banquet will go to the project and to support the Ohio Christian Alliance. To find out more, log on to our website to register at ohioca.org. Well, this hour we're going to talk about legislation at the State House, and with us on the phone is State Senator Frank LaRose as the budget is being dealt with at the State House and the Senate's about to receive it. Frank, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Chris. Thank you so much for having me. And let me say congratulations for all the great work that you and Ohio Christian Alliance has done on getting the D-Day prayer at the World War II Memorial. What an important part of our nation's history, and so glad that you're helping to make sure that future generations are aware of that.
Well, thank you. And of course, thank you for your service to our country as you served in the armed forces. And of course, this prayer isn't just for the World War II veterans, but for all veterans. It's a remembrance of all those who have served our country in time of war and peace. And so we thank you for your compliment, and we look forward to celebrating together at its dedication, now slated for sometime in June of 2018, if all goes well. And so we're very excited about that, but thank you.
Absolutely.
Well, let's talk some policy that is happening down at the Ohio State House, and you've been serving us as state senator for those in Summit County for some time now, and of course, the budget is being discussed. It's over in the House right now, a number of interesting aspects to that budget. We'll get to that in a minute, but you have some legislation that you're working on, so let's talk about that.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, a number of things that I've been focusing on this year. Obviously, the budget is one of the most important things that the state legislature does every 2 years, and look forward to talking to you about that. One of the main focuses that I've had during my time here in the legislature have been the way we conduct our elections and making sure that we do everything we can do to root out fraud, to make sure that our elections processes are conducted in an efficient way and in a way that makes sure that everyone's vote is counted, and that every Ohioan has the opportunity to vote, but also that we prevent fraudulent voting from happening. And we've made some good progress on that. Last year, we passed a bill that you and I had some conversations about, and it creates the online voter registration system in the state of Ohio.
Yes.
Because of the work that your group did, we decided to take our time and delay the implementation of that until we got past this past presidential election. And so as of January 1st, when we were celebrating the new year, we were also switching the switch on to allow Ohioans to start using online voter registration. One of the great things about that system is that it is more efficient than the old paper system, and it's more secure because it requires anybody that's registering to vote to have a state ID,
yes,
or a state driver's license, and that information has to match with the BMV system as well as with the information on file with the Ohio Secretary of State. And then, well, as long as that information matches matches, then you can register to vote from the convenience of home.
Well, yeah, exactly. And the Secretary of State has announced that. That was your legislation. And, of course, he was rearing to go when 2017 came around, and he has announced that. We've heard some PSAs out there announcing the new opportunity for people to register online. But it also has the safeguards. But let me ask you this first. You've talked to the Secretary of State. How is it running, the new program of registration online? How is that working out so far for him?
Well, I've spoken with the Secretary of State, and in fact, earlier this week, I had the chance to talk with one of the gentlemen that works in the IT department, who's there kind of monitoring the system on a daily basis and making sure that it's working in a secure way. The good news is that everything is working the way it's supposed to, and because of the work that you did and encouraging us to delay the implementation of it, we've had sort of a soft launch. You know, like when you open a new restaurant, you may only want to invite a few customers in the first couple days to get your kitchen up to speed and that kind of thing. Same thing with this. Because it's a off year, we're not dealing with a presidential election currently, the number of registrants through the online system has been relatively small, and that's predictable. And so we've been able to kind of phase it in and work to make sure that everything's going well. So far, so good. Ohioans, I believe at last count, several hundred Ohioans have taken advantage of this. As we get closer to the general election this fall, I imagine that will turn into several thousand, and certainly when we get into a gubernatorial election year,
yes,
next year, that number will grow even more. And you mentioned some of the safeguards that are in place in this bill, and that's part of it that I'm very proud of as well. We included in this a requirement that the Secretary of State do an annual investigation to make sure that only eligible Ohioans are registered to vote in the state of Ohio. And what we mean by that is only citizens of the state of Ohio and citizens of the United States of America. The good news is, now that we have this connection between the BMV database and the Secretary of State's database, the Ohio BMV tracks those who are citizens and who are non-citizens. Now, we have lots of people that come to this country to work, come here legally, for example, to work in one of our tech businesses, and they might be here for a couple years. They get a driver's license, but the BMV tracks the fact that they're not a citizen. That's information that we have.
If one of those individuals
were to also attempt to register to vote, obviously that would be illegal. And this would flag that. And so as of this spring, when Secretary Husted did the investigation that's required under this bill, they found a couple hundred people that were registered to vote illegally. They were notified. They were removed from the rolls. And if they didn't act, then they'll be referred for prosecution. And again, that's the kind of thing that Ohioans want us to do to make sure that our system of elections, which, by the way, is the envy of the world. I mean, we run great elections here,
yes,
in this country, but nothing's perfect. We found this is just another safeguard to make sure that we're protecting our ballot box in the state of Ohio.
Well, that's right. And I remember in 2012, in fact, there were those from the international community that came and did some poll watching and elections watching. And actually, they were wondering, they said, this is pretty open and fair. And so, you know, we've gotten compliments like that. But I like the provisions you put in your bill that, you know, for the online voter registration, because there was some concerns because of websites that have been hacked and manipulated and those kinds of things, everything from the Pentagon to the HUD, Department of HUD and others. And, of course, the private sector as well. All of them have been victim of being hacked and their information being divulged. But the Secretary of State has done his due diligence here to make sure that the platform is safe and secure. And what we were saying is, let's just proceed with some caution, making sure that these safeguards are in place. We weren't in opposition to the bill. We just thought that we spoke the areas of concern, and you addressed that. So did the Secretary of State and the legislature. So the folks I talked to were satisfied with that. So I'm glad to know that the program is going well. And again, matching up against, as Secretary of State said, this is voter photo ID because it matches with your driver's licenses, and you have these checks and balances in place, and I think that's a great thing. So that's what people are wanting.
That's one of the great things about the legislative process. It works when it's allowed to work, and when you take your time to have several hearings on a bill in the Senate, and then you have several hearings on the bill in the House, thoughtful advocates like you, representing the thousands of families that you represent through Ohio Christian Alliance, come down and help us make our legislation better. And in this case, you did that, and I salute you for it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And so, you know, as we move on here into the new legislature, obviously you've got some legislation you're ready to introduce. There was a break, and so not only on the federal level, but also on the state level, things are getting going. In fact, I know Rules and Reference met today. A number of bills were referred to committee. Senate Bill 1, tell us about that, because we had Attorney General Mike DeWine on the program with us a couple weeks ago. And of course, he has a real passion about the heroin epidemic that is just running wild here in Ohio. The Attorney General has really utilized the resources of his office across the state and he himself personally to get out there in the communities to find out and get ahead of this thing that's having such a terrible effect with our young people and really people of all ages across the state. And you introduced Senate Bill 1. Tell us about that.
Yeah, Senate Bill 1, my Senate colleagues and I, all 33 of us, made this the top priority bill. That's why we made it Senate Bill 1, the first bill that we introduced this year. And this is meant to deal with one component of the opioid crisis that we're dealing with at Ohio. And crisis is the only adequate term to describe this. The way I describe it to people is open your newspaper, look at the obituary pages. You'll see, unfortunately, a lot of young faces, and you'll see words like died unexpectedly or was lost too soon. Or in some cases, families are bold enough to say lost his or her battle with addiction. These are families that are hurting, Chris. These are Ohio families that are losing loved ones to this terrible, terrible epidemic of drug overdoses. And again, this is not something that is confined to the city or the country or the suburbs. It's not a black issue or a white issue. It's not happening only in rich families or poor families. This is impacting every Ohioan. Ohio currently, and this is unacceptable, Ohio leads the nation in overdose deaths. This is something that all of us need to be focused on and all of us need to be concerned about. The biggest culprit in these overdose deaths is this thing called fentanyl and carfentanil. Now, just so your listeners know, carfentanil is used in clinical settings in surgery as a very heavy-duty painkiller. It's used in tiny quantities in surgical settings and that kind of thing. Carfentanil is even more powerful than that, and it's used as a large animal tranquilizer. It's used when a zoo performs surgery on an elephant, for example. This stuff is deadly in tiny, tiny quantities. And what's happening is people are smuggling this stuff into the country. They're trafficking it into our cities. It's being mixed with heroin. And so these heroin dealers are making money selling poison to our fellow Ohioans. No. And heroin is already deadly. Heroin it kills people in droves. When it's mixed with fentanyl or carfentanil, it's a death sentence. It's a near certainty. What's happening on our streets is unacceptable. What's happening in our homes is unacceptable. And what this bill does is goes after those traffickers. These people are selling poison and they know it's going to kill people. And so we're going to put them in jail when they do that. Now, there are many components to fighting a scourge like addiction. We need to make sure that additional resources are available for treatment. These are men and women that in many cases became addicted. They had maybe had a surgery. They became addicted to pain medication. They moved on from pain medication to heroin in order to satisfy their addiction. These are men and women who have an illness, who have a very serious illness that is resulting in their death through these overdoses. And so treatment and making sure that people can get their lives back together is one component. My bill, however, deals with the traffickers. To describe this, I came into committee with some visual aids. The folks at the Attorney General's office, our friend Mike DeWine's office, gave me some visual aids. They used powdered sugar to replicate fentanyl, and they gave me these little Ziploc bags, and just a tiny quantity of this stuff is deadly. A way to describe it is if you take the salt shaker off your table and you just get a few grains of salt, just enough to cover Abraham Lincoln's chin on a penny is the way I described it, just a few grains of salt. That is the lethal dose for the average adult. It takes 0.1 grams of fentanyl to kill somebody in pure form. Now, just for comparison, cyanide, which is intended to kill people, you'd need 0.3 grams of cyanide in order to kill, when one-third of that, 0.1 grams, of fentanyl would kill somebody. Now, because the drug laws were put in place years ago that were never intended to deal with something this lethal, you would need to have enough fentanyl to kill 10,000 people in order to get a felony. You would need to be carrying around enough fentanyl. It almost qualifies as a weapon of mass destruction. A few months ago,
When did this change? Obviously, the law was arcane to deal with the current crisis. This fentanyl and, of course, the heroin epidemic. I was talking with Attorney General Mike DeWine. It emerged in the last few years. Fentanyl is part of that. In fact, I understand that the Chinese are manufacturing it synthetically and also bringing that into the country. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. From what we can tell, it's mostly manufactured illegally overseas. It's shipped into the country in the mail in FedEx and UPS, and thankfully these shippers, FedEx and UPS, have been working on cracking down on this, and I believe there's some efforts underway at the federal level to work with our partners in China to get them to crack down on it. I know that members of our congressional delegation that traveled to China recently brought this up with their counterparts when they were over there, and so when this stuff gets here. I'll give you an example. In Dayton, I just got off the phone a couple weeks ago with the county sheriff out there, Sheriff Phil Plummer, great guy. His sheriff's deputies interdicted a car traveling down the interstate, and they found 6 pounds of pure fentanyl in this car. 6 pounds of pure fentanyl is enough to kill almost a million people. Like I said, that's like a weapon of mass destruction. That's an incredibly lethal drug. And so what we're doing with this bill is updating the sentencing guidelines to make sure that when traffickers are dealing with this poison, selling it on our streets, that they're going to get the jail time that they deserve for it. It's about cracking down on traffickers, and we were very careful to not accidentally ensnare addicts. The line that I use, and it's more than just a line, it's what we believe, is that addicts need to be in treatment, but traffickers need to be in prison. And that's what this bill does, and that's why it got bipartisan support on the Senate floor, and it's now pending over in the House, and I hope they take it up soon.
Oh, that's awesome. And that really pairs well with the Attorney General's doing. It's giving him and law enforcement what they need to curb the problem out on the street. Now, you talked and you get briefings from the Turnpike Commission, and the governor referenced them in his State of the State of the fine work that our State Highway Patrol is doing, because obviously the commerce of our roadways is how many of these drug traffickers bring the wares into the state, heroin and fentanyl, that is having a devastating effect on our citizens and our communities. What are you hearing in the briefings at the Turnpike Commission?
So I serve on the Turnpike Commission as the Senate Transportation Chair. I've had that opportunity for the last 2 years, and Ohio has many blessings. One of the things that we're blessed with is great geography. We're in a good location to be a logistical leader in the country. As we like to say in Ohio, you're within one day's drive of over half the United States population. Ohio is well positioned. That's why companies like Amazon are bringing their distribution centers to Ohio and putting Ohioans to work. That's great news. You can't get from New York to Chicago reasonably without passing through Ohio. And so Ohio is a place where we have a great opportunity economically to lead the nation in logistics, trucking, distribution, that kind of thing. But at the same time, because we're in that also makes us, unfortunately, a leader in illicit distribution like drugs. And so what we're seeing coming through Ohio, passing through Ohio, is human trafficking and drug trafficking. And a lot of that is being caught on our turnpike. The brave men and women of our State Highway Patrol who are out there 24 hours a day keeping us safe are finding these kind of things passing through Ohio. And every month when we get a briefing from the Highway Patrol, they give us photos of the kind of things that they're doing, and they don't catch everything, but they're doing a very good job. And so when you're driving down the highway or driving down the turnpike and you see that highway patrolman out there, they're not just shooting radar, they're not just trying to catch speeders, they're looking for people that are trafficking in fellow human beings, which is just an absolute horror to me, but also bringing these drugs into our state and through our state. And so Ohio's leading the way, and Ohio's Highway Patrol is leading the way on cracking down on this, and Senate Bill 1 will be another tool that they can use to make sure that these people get the jail time they deserve when they're trafficking large quantities of fentanyl through the state of Ohio.
Very good. Now, Senate Bill 1, it did pass the Senate. It's on its way over to the House. Is that correct?
Yes, with bipartisan support, and I'm proud of that. This is one of those, it's not a Republican issue, it's not a Democratic issue, it's an issue for Ohioans. And I would say, and as you as the leader of Ohio Christian Alliance, I hope would agree that this is an issue that, that people of faith should be concerned about as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
Again, talk to your friends at church, and you will find, you may be surprised, that people you know have children, grandchildren, neighbors, fellow church members that are dealing with this kind of addiction. And so it's something that we're taking very seriously. And it's something that, like I said, we were able to get a bipartisan vote on, and that's very good news for Ohio.
You know, Senator, it is. It's really, wreaked havoc throughout our communities, and the church community has not been untouched in this. And unfortunately, I know of a few pastors who have older children who actually died through an addiction overdose in the last year or so. And so it's tragic, and it's happening in real time. And so we want to thank you for your efforts on Senate Bill 1. Now, what committee will it be in?
I got a text message from a friend of ours, someone who you know, who was from the Wayne County community, a pastor of a large church there who's now serving in a larger role in his denomination. And he told me that his son had just died of an overdose, and I called him and we discussed it, and then he sent me a text message a few days later that said that when the toxicology came back, the report from the coroner came back, they learned that it wasn't just a heroin overdose, it involved fentanyl as well.
I see.
And so it's impacting every facet of life in Ohio.
It's tragic, and we thank you for what you're doing. What committee will it be in over in the House, Senate Bill 1?
My guess is it's going to go to the Criminal Justice Committee, but don't know for sure. And again, my hope is that our colleagues in the House, now that they're going to have a little bit more time as they're getting, they're sort of bringing the budget in for a landing, I hope that this is high on their priority list of issues that they want to work on.
How do the folks contact you, Senator, to find out what you're doing at the State House?
Well, there's a couple ways. First of all, I like to say the best way is face-to-face interaction. I'm out in the community a lot, whether it's at community events like the one that you hold here in a couple weeks or other things. I also do district office hours. We do those quarterly where I'm at the library. I serve three counties, Summit County, Stark County, and Wayne County. And so I'm at the library, at the City Hall, that kind of thing, and folks can come in and talk to me. Also, social media is a great way. I answer those messages. I respond to folks on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. You can find me on there just at Frank LaRose, which is my name, FranklaRose. And a lot of times my wife will say, hey, it's 11 o'clock, it's time to go to bed, but I'll be busy responding to my constituents because it's a great way to stay in touch with them. If you prefer more traditional ways, you can always write us a letter at the State House. My stand rule is, you know, we get a lot of form letters, and that's fine, but when I get a handwritten letter from somebody, I know that that's their original thought. They've actually put their time to write a handwritten letter to me, so I see all of those that come to my desk.
Very good.
And then on the Senate website, ohiosenate.gov, and there's a form there. So there's a lot of ways to contact me. If there's an issue you're passionate about, there's no good excuse for not contacting your state legislator.
Senator, thank you for being on our program today. We'll have to have you back. So much to talk about. God bless you, friend.
Thanks, Chris, and God bless you as well.
Thank you. And we'll be right back after these messages. Don't go away.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
Those serving in our military, they're the difference makers. Separated from family, enduring hardships far from home, sacrificing for their country while serving in a different country. Well, for those of us who support our armed forces through the USO, we get to make a difference too. Through the USO, we get to be the force that delivers the phone call between spouse and deployed service member. The force that brings newborn and new parent together through a delivery room video chat. And the force that makes sure our military serving 7,000 miles away gets to watch the big game from a USO center. We get to be the force behind the forces, connecting them to every comfort of family, home, and country possible. It's a good feeling to make a difference. Visit uso.org/force to learn how you can be the force behind the forces.
Okay, and with us on the phone is State Representative Andy Thompson, and he has legislation that he's introducing that will give more local control of academics and of our school curriculum back to the local districts. Representative, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Chris. How are you doing?
Good, and it's a busy day down at the State House, I presume?
Sure. We've been in Finance Committee hearing testimony regarding the, revised, we have a substitute bill for the budget, and so just going through some provisions and taking testimony there and then meeting with some more folks this afternoon.
The municipal tax issue, are you aware of that and versed on that?
Yeah, I'm pretty well versed on that.
That's something that we're favoring, the municipal tax reform effort that will simplify the filing of municipal tax for businesses through the Business Gateway. Instead of filing in each and every community and municipality where they've done contracted work, that's really been a burden to small business and family-owned business throughout the years that each... if a contractor is a window and siding contractor or a plumber or electrician, every community where he's done work, he has to file a separate tax form. That is just ridiculous. And
no, makes no sense. It's very business unfriendly.
And so it's something we got to get corrected. And this proposal will simplify that, running it through the state, through the Business Gateway, and it'll be one filing. There'll still be all the varied rates depending upon what that municipality has, but much more simpler in paperwork for business interest, and the Ohio Christian Alliance is in support of that.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I certainly do as well. And this has been a multi-year process of trying to deal with this issue. Ohio has more taxing jurisdictions than any other state in the nation. And as a consequence of that, it is hard to do business. And it is everybody's kind of trying to take a chunk out of you wherever you go. And I think if we want to encourage business growth and we want to make sure that those businesses we already have are a greater number of them succeed, we need to alleviate those burdens, the regulatory burden and the taxation burden. Ohio can do better, and I hope we will in the years to come.
Well, we've done a couple of things over the last few years. Of course, we got rid of Ohio's estate tax finally in the first term of Governor Kasich. He did keep his campaign pledge to get rid of Ohio's estate tax or death tax. That was a real burden on families. Farmers and families. You shouldn't be taxed upon your death. You've paid taxes your whole life. And for farms, the small family farm was being lost simply because of the tax obligation upon the death of the owner of the property. And that needed to go bye-bye. And of course it did. So we little by little, we're getting some things corrected here. There's so much more work to do. But what we want to talk about today is the Common Core standards have been a real topic over the last number of years. People can't stand Common Core. The people I talk to across the state as I go and talk to different community groups and through our network, it's really a top-down burden on the local school districts into the classroom. And actually just some real insanity with some of these standards as well that aren't making any kind of logical sense. And a lot of parents I talk to think that their students are in some kind of guinea pig program. Some of the I guess, examples of the past was the new math back in the day when I was going through school. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being I remember bringing home my math studies to have my dad help me. He says, I can't understand any of this. And, you know, he had a good handle on basic math. He could have helped me there. You got to get the fundamentals down if you want to go on to algebra and calculus and other things. But when they throw in this whole new dynamic of back in the day of new math, and then you went from phonics, which was a proven tool from time eternal of how someone learns grammar and reading and to articulate, but they went to sight reading, and I was part of that guinea pig experience as well.
Oh, gee.
And he had all these kind of crippling factors along the way, because education, they get together in a room somewhere, the NEA, and they come up with some of these ideas, some of which aren't that great, and Common Core is the monstrosity of them all, is it not?
Common Core is just like, it's a virus. There's a virus that keeps getting much more virulent as you go down the road. And in education, it seems very much like the Soviet system. We do have like a 5-year plan, and we come up with a title that sounds really appealing, like, you know, Schools to Work, or Goals 2000, or No Child Left Behind, and most recently, Every Student Succeeds Act. So, you know, each one of these things is, it makes matters a little bit worse. It tightens the noose around the neck of, parents and students and local school districts. And what I've been trying to do over the last several years, Chris, is, number one, deal with the issue of Common Core and try to get those as they kind of the definitive standard in Ohio to eliminate that equation. But also, over time, I've learned that we need to empower local school districts, because we've lost that over time. We've really lost the ability of our local districts to make many decisions whatsoever. They can try to pass levies, but that's about all we leave up to them. And I think what my bill does is it substantially reduces the number of mandated assessments. And, of course, exams go from 7 to 3. There's a kindergarten readiness assessment. We do away with that. The third grade reading guarantee, which was used for retaining students, we make that diagnostic, really. Not, you know, it's permissive. You can give it permissively, but it's not going to be used to, send a kid backwards. And again, I understand that certain kids need more help and may need assistance with reading. But what happens with a lot of this testing is, you know, you take one test and that kind of determines the outcome of your life. And the notion is, we want teachers to have the ability to make a difference in the lives of students. The number one factor in a student's success is a teacher. And so if we have said to teachers, your only role is really to be, you know, prepping kids for the next test, that's really not the purpose of education. It takes away, you know, this isn't what a lot of teachers sign up for.
No.
Teachers don't want. And so
a good teacher is a skill. And it's a gift.
Yes.
And we can all, absolutely, we can all think back of that favorite teacher that really made a difference in our life. And there might have been one, more than one of them. And I can remember a couple along the way that really spoke words to me at a critical time. And you reference that, and they set you on the right path when you were veering a little bit, or maybe you were floundering. A teacher really can have real instrumental just guidance and input into a student's life. But if they're nothing more than a facilitator of the federal standards, then that's not what they signed up for. That's not their passion. We're taking away their ability, their gifting, their passion of what they want to do in teaching. I agree with you. And, you know, we have a pretty fair school district in Barberton. Actually, it's kind of a throwback district, to be honest with you. I mean, they don't put up with any kind of tomfoolery in the classroom or in the school grounds. And it's an interracial community as well. Everybody's getting along. And they have administrators and teachers that actually encourage these kids to go to college. Now, of course, we think about the trades, and that's another aspect. You have a principal at Barberton. He's really pushing for kids to get into the trades, those who don't need to go to college. Some of the kids, no one in their family has ever gone to college, and they're the first one that's going to go to college. Well, that's quite an achievement. And so in Barberton, that's a little unique than some of the other districts. Say, well, boy, college, you know, it's very expensive. Yes, but for some of these kids, no one in their immediate family or in their history has gone to college, and for them to be able to go to college is a really big event. And the Community Foundation of Barberton actually is awarding those who are first-time college entries, and it's really special. It's really a moving experience at the grant program, but scholarship program night. But in addition to that, you have a principal there who's got a passion about kids who are going to be electricians and plumbers and carpenters and get into some of the trades, and actually, those are good paying jobs, Andy.
Yep, we do. I mean, and I think with the comeback of oil and gas especially, you've seen demand for welders, electricians, machinists. I mean, there are so many opportunities to, yes, support a family, to raise kids, to send kids off to college, and to be able to save and you know, feed your family, put food on the table. I think that they probably have been neglected in the past. Now, I have to say this. I've always thought that our vocational schools have done an outstanding job. What we don't do a great job of is helping kids kind of figure out what their passion is. And I want to say one thing. I don't like the idea that government's going to somehow determine for kids what their passion is going to be.
Amen.
I think that should remain the province of parents and, you know, students and in some cases teachers to help guide on that. But
well, let's talk about that, because that's what your bill addresses, because some of this testing is actually profile analysis, isn't it, of the student?
Very much.
Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I think there's a fair argument to be made that this isn't even about education anymore. It's really about a kind of a corporate crony approach to it, where you're gathering all this data on students and you're using the testing as the vehicle to do that. When you've got a Google Chromebook, which they gave you for free, all the activity there is recorded in a database. And so you're logging on to some website and they're garnering data on each of the kids that's participating. So the online testing is one component of that. The requirement that kids in the high school level are going to take, everybody's got to take the ACT and the SAT. Well, embedded in those tests are like 5 or 6 questions which have nothing to do with, you know, the test itself. They're just for data questions. You know, what's your grade point average? What do you like to see? There's just a series of questions they do that are, I think, very much inappropriate, and they don't spell out the fact that those aren't mandatory questions.
When did those start being snuck into the test?
I think it's probably when the college boards were taken over. You know, the guy who was responsible for Common Core is now the president of the college boards.
Ah, interesting.
So they have infiltrated everywhere, and it's kind of like, you know, you remember in the old fairy tale, I guess, the story that the kids go into the woods and they're trying to get to grandma's house and they leave breadcrumbs behind them. Well, they're snatching up all these breadcrumbs. We've got so many variables that have changed in education. How the heck do they determine, you know, how we're doing, whether we're succeeding? Everything's been changed. The SAT has been dumbed down. The ACT, I don't know what they've done with that, but, you know, the standards have been changed. We have just done so much to mess things up and to really, we have lost our way. We have a graduation crisis coming up where kids, you know, we're having to scramble to find some way to allow kids to graduate because the testing has been so messed up. And so what my bill does is it recognizes that we need to reduce the testing. We need to protect the privacy of students and parents and teachers related to the data that's personally identifiable. And I've been fighting that battle for about 5 or 6 years.
We're talking with State Representative Andy Thompson, and we're talking about his new legislation that will give more educational control back to the school districts away from the federal heavy hand that Common Core represented over the last number of years. And it's House Bill 176. Is that right?
Yes, 176. And, you know, that 76 number is always, somehow that sticks in my mind for some reason. I don't know. I think it represents freedom. And I think we're really trying to return freedom and authority to the local level where it's most likely to be, it's closest to the people. And hopefully that'll make a positive difference for those who are engaged in education.
Well, that's right. And of course, you know, we always encourage every aspect of education for parents to get involved, whether they're doing homeschool, private school, you know, online school or public school, to be involved in your child's education, to know exactly what's being taught. Over the years, we've had these battles that have come along where somebody from the National Education Association, a very liberal group, of course, and their overplay of trying to control every student in every community across the land. And of course, as you presented it, this profile testing is a way of almost socialism, is that, well, you're more skewed to be this vocation. Well, you know, that's none of their business. It's up to the individual. That's what freedom's all about, to be able to choose your own path in life, to make your own to your own mistakes at times, and to learn from them. And so to find out, you know, in fact, another thing is, you know, somebody going into college and spending a lot of money for the first year, you know, the first 2 years sometimes are throwaway years because they don't know what they want to do yet in their major. You know, so that's not every student. You know, some kids get it, and some haven't figured it out yet. So, you know, all of this plays a big part of how we're going to go forward with education in this country.
I think it gets back to, you know, what do we think the purpose of education is? And there are certain institutions, I think, who get this and understand it very well. You know, Ashland University, the Ashbrook School, I think one of your daughters went there. And I think that's, you know, they understand what education is all about and what they're looking for in students. We're getting so far away from the purpose of education, which is really a exploration of, you know, truth and right and wrong, and you know, just expanding your knowledge and being a well-rounded person, and being able, you know, ultimately, I think the liberal arts are a great way for you to explore where your interests may lie. It's not merely, life is not a job training exercise, and I think, unfortunately, our governor has even embraces the idea that somehow education is just workforce development. I think that's very unfortunate. I think we want to teach students about civics. We want them to understand what it is to be a citizen, you know, to understand beauty and truth. I mean, under, you know, Common Core, the philosophy is, hey, you don't need to know poetry. You're not going to use that in your job. Well, that's not really the purpose of education. I think the purpose of education is to provide those experiences. I hope we're reading the great books, you know, not just reading Obama Directive Number 732. Education has very much been undermined. Teachers have been undermined. Students are being data mined. So we have a lot of problems there. And my perspective on this matter is, I wouldn't say necessarily unique, but I can tell you this much. I have a wife and at least one of my kids who do not do well on standardized tests. My wife is a honors graduate of the University of Texas, but you'd put her in front of an SAT or an ACT, she would just freeze. And so when you design a system that is so much based on test, 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 and test, you are really not serving well those people who don't have a real aptitude or a real facility for that. And it's neglecting those folks who otherwise are performing very capably in the classroom. So our local control aspect, our bill itself, is trying to alleviate some of those concerns. At least over the next couple years, we were saying school systems could utilize the coursework as the determinant of who graduates rather than who passed a particular test or got a certain score on an ACT. We really wanted to help bridge that gap and, frankly, buy us a little more time so that the Trump administration, who has pledged to get rid of Common Core, can provide some assistance at the federal level or kind of reduce the threats that have come from the federal level about, you know, we're going to take your money away if you don't do exactly what we tell you.
Well, hold on there, because we're going to get to that. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking with State Representative Andy Thompson. We're talking about his new legislation, House Bill 176, which really puts educational oversight back to the local communities and away from the federal control. You're listening to News in Focus. We'll be right back after these messages. Don't go away.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
Those serving in our military, they're the difference makers. Separated from family, enduring hardships far from home, sacrificing for their country while serving in a different country. Well, for those of us who support our armed forces through the USO, we get to make a difference too. Through the USO, we get to be the force that delivers the phone call between spouse and deployed service member. The force that brings newborn and new parent together through a delivery room video chat. And the force that makes sure our military serving 7,000 miles away gets to watch the big game from a USO center. We get to be the force behind the forces, connecting them to every comfort of family, home, and country possible. It's a good feeling to make a difference. Visit uso.org/force to learn how you can be the force behind the forces.
And we're back with State Representative Andy Thompson and his legislation to, I would say, pretty much put a dagger in the heart of Common Core here in the state of Ohio, House Bill 176, which would basically cut the ties with the federal standards and bring local control sanity back to Ohio's educational process. And the people said amen. And that's what's been needed. Our president has vowed to do away with Common Core in his remarks as a candidate. And of course, he has a new education secretary. And let's talk about that, Representative. How do you see the Trump administration as they're proceeding? It's been pretty quiet there, as far as I can tell. I haven't seen anything earth-shaking as far as from the Department of Education under, is it Nancy DeMoss that heads that up now?
No. It's, Betsy DeVos.
Betsy DeVos.
And people will recognize that name because it's the she's married into the Amway family and fortune. I think she came from some significant means herself, but when you put the Amway equation in there, you know that they have a lot of resources. They've been very generous donors to conservative causes, including Heritage Foundation and I'm sure the American Enterprise Institute and places like that. I think, you know, I was somewhat concerned because she has in the past been an advocate of Common Core. She's worked closely with Jeb Bush and also with the Gates Foundation. So there's a little bit of a high credibility burden that she needs to get over. Just, I think last week she was in Ohio and took a tour of a public school and said, we're not worried about Common Core anymore. And I thought to myself, well, you may not be worried about it, but I sure hear about it from my constituents. I hear about it when I, you know, go door to door during campaign season. I hear about it from people in Columbus. People, you know, the public isn't fooled, although there's this effort underway to say, well, we rebranded it, we've tweaked our standards.
What is this rebranding that they're talking about, that they actually did away with the Common Core, say?
They didn't. In the states, I think Indiana was one of the first states where they had this uprising where some mothers got together and said, we don't like what you're doing in our schools, we're taking it to the mat. And they marched on the Capitol in Indianapolis, and they raised holy heck, and you know, Indiana had to respond. Well, so they thought, oh, hooray, we're gonna come up with our own standards, we're gonna write them. Well, when they sat down and wrote the standards, guess what? They came up with Common Core Lite. So there was really no fundamental change. They tweaked it a little bit. And what they end up doing is trying to put, the hound off the scent of the trail. They're really just trying to confuse people and make them pretend that they've, oh, yes, we give, uncle. And, we're gonna fix that. And really they end up doing the same old stuff.
Now, the PARC tests, are they still in operation, the PARC tests?
No, the PARC test was eliminated in Ohio. The concern, however, was AIR, which is the replacement, are the same people that brought you PARC. So that egregious aspect of the testing really didn't go away either. That was another bait and switch. So even though we got rid of Park, we didn't get rid of this, you know, the overall testing problem, and actually it can get worse because this group, AIR, is really focused on social and emotional testing. They want to do, like, you know, how is your vital statistics, how's that changing in response to certain questions that are asked, and how does the test adapt based on answers that you give. So there's just a lot of stuff that people don't have any idea of that's going on in education. It's very, very unfortunate. Parents are, you know, clever enough to see that the math, how terrible the math is, and that the math does not work.
Right.
And it's almost designed to confuse parents so that they look like idiots, and the kids can come home and say, well, my teacher knows better than you do. You know, so it kind of does, it plays that unfortunate role too. We should be bringing everybody together under the umbrella of education.
Yes.
And Common Core is a very divisive kind of pitting people against each other.
We got 1 minute left. House Bill 176, where is it at in committee, and how can we support it?
We're trying to get our referral to committee right now. I've got nearly 30 co-sponsors. I've probably got more than 35 committed votes once it gets to the floor. I'm meeting with interested parties, everyone from OEA and the School Board Association. I'm going to meet with the people in the Department of Education. I'm meeting with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle. I've got some good response there. We're working with a group of citizen activists across the state. We're working with the Farm Bureau. They have it in their state policy that they want to get rid of Common Core. So we're uniting a bunch of people under this banner. Certainly would love to have the support of your listeners, and I would encourage them to get in touch with their state representative to encourage them to support House Bill 176.
Absolutely. Thank you, Representative. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Chris. Good to be with you.
We'll see you. God bless.
Bye-bye.
That was State Representative Andy Thompson, House Bill 176, that returns the control of education back to the local district, does away with Common Core. You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. You can learn more at our organization at ohioca.org. God bless and good night.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.